Chapter 40. Noble Goals. Wind rustled the leaves of the ash and maple trees, yellow, orange, and red, fluttering like uncounted thousands of tiny pennants. Booted and slippered feet walked side by side along well-worn footpaths that wended their way through Darrow Park. It was not along their way, but afforded Brannis and Soria some peace and a tranquil setting to talk. "It may be cold, Brannis, but it makes sense. If this girl isn't Celia, and you don't fall for their trick, then the conspirators have no reason to harm her. If you do try to help her, Celia or not, then she is valuable to them," Soria reasoned. She was dressed against the cold, in a long fur coat that looked either brown or black, depending on which way the light caught it. "And if she is Celia, and we do nothing?" Brannis asked. "Then she fends for herself. If she is Celia, she has it in her to do whatever it takes to get by," Soria replied. "Would it make you happy if she got herself killed because you left her to her good fortune?" Brannis rather suspected it would, but he wanted to hear it from her.
"Maybe, maybe not. I don't see why I ought to stick my head in the noose for her, though."
"You just hate that everyone in Cadran seems to be pushing her and Kyrus together. With you married off now, it had to be someone, you know. Kyrus cannot stay a bachelor forever, not with sorceress blood like that. The inner circle would never stand for it. You could have picked someone who was not a lying, murdering, manipulative..." Soria stopped her litany of derogatory adjectives when she noticed Brannis smiling. "Seems to be the type of girl who is drawn to me," he commented, grinning. Soria's jaw clenched, her lips pursed tight. She looked ready to hit him for a moment. She glanced at Brannis in his armor, and he found himself thankful that he was rather well protected from physical chastisement. Soria took hold of his arm for the rest of their walk through Darrow Park, a possessive gesture to be certain. Brannis shook his head when she was not looking his way. It was as if they were schoolchildren again, and she was waiting to hear if they were to be betrothed. Such bald jealousy was unbecoming, but given her recent brush with death, Juliana's at least, he could understand her need to cling to him. When they arrived at Abelais' studio home, Brannis hesitated. The two of them stood at the door, Brannis staring dumbly at it, unable to move, with Soria still clutching his arm. "It is just a door. She is just a girl. This is nothing to be nervous about."
Brannis managed to knock.
They waited again, hearing voices from the inside, then footsteps.
"Hello, what have we here?"
a man greeted them as the door opened. He was dressed in a gentleman's manner, with an embroidered red doublet and black hose, with a gold chain about his neck, bearing a heraldry Brannis did not recognize. He was not certain by his face, but between Kyrus's half-remembered knowledge of the man and Soria's report, he had to be Thomas Harwick.
"Hello.
Might we speak with Abelais Tillman?" Brannis managed to ask. He worried that the awkward pause before speaking to the man was not mistaken for rudeness.
Of course," Thomas assured him. "Abby, dearest, you simply must come here and meet your guests. You will see why, I promise,"
he called across the studio. There was a sound of something wooden being set down. A moment later, Abelais appeared at the door. A gust of memory extinguished Brannis's thoughts, leaving him mute and blank-faced while he sought to relight the wick.
Luckily, Abelais seemed similarly affected.
"My good sir, I mean no rudeness, but you must come inside and see this," Thomas said,
then ushered Brannis and Soria into the studio before either Brannis or Abelais recovered their power of speech.
And Brannis saw it. Propped on Abelais' easel was him. Mirrors had occasionally shown him a better resemblance, but just barely. He was dressed in armor, plainer than Liad's that he wore, but similar in style to what he had worn upon his first adventure with Rashaan, when they had met in Kelvi Forest. He was sitting on a log in the middle of a woodland scene, resting one hand on the pommel of Massacre, the serrated blade of Heaven's Cry, and the whimsical sculpted dragon hilt and crossguard and all. In his other hand, upraised, he held a ball of flame. He did not think it was Kairos in the picture, but himself. Soria and Juliana swore to the resemblance, but Brannis knew his own face and Kairos's. More importantly, he knew them apart from one another.
"I say, it is uncanny, do you not agree?" Thomas asked.
"Aye, it is," Abile managed to reply.
She sounded just as Kairos's memory would have her, though perhaps a bit more confused.
"Indeed," Brannis agreed.
He looked to Soria, whose eyes were wide, staring at the nearly finished painting.
"You had said this was a painting of Kairos Hinterdale someone commissioned," the gentleman said. "It certainly looked enough like the fellow I saw at trial that I would never have spoken a word against it. But it is strikingly like this fine gentleman before us. Oh, but pardon me, my manners. My name is Thomas Harwick."
"Sir Erend Hinterdale, this is my lady, Soria." Brannis presented Soria, preferring to leave their exact relationship vague.
"Oh, I was not aware of any Hinterdales in the knighthood," Thomas commented.
"My husband's title was bestowed by Kesh, by Lord Kazin. He uses the Icardian term to prevent having to explain the intricacies of the Keshi Order of Fallen Stars to everyone he meets," Soria explained, allowing her Keshi accent to come through clearly in her Icardian.
"Oh, you have traveled?"
Abile asked, displaying her curiosity about the wider world. It was rather unlike Celia, Brannis thought, but he could still not deny the resemblance, nor the inexplicable ability to paint a picture of him.
"To come here, yes. I was raised in northern Kesh by Icardian parents. Sir Erend grew up in Marker's Point as a merchant's son, and lived for a short time in Kesh where we met," Soria said.
Brannis wondered how much of that she had prepared ahead of time, and how much she was making up as she went.
"This is simply fascinating. I must admit that I had a bet going with my father. I am losing 1,000 eccles for someone showing up looking like this painting. You simply must join us for dinner this evening. My father, Lord Harwick, would be equally interested to meet you, I'm sure. It is one of his causes to see the Hinterdale family compensated for the false claims of witchcraft, and see Kairos Hinterdale's name cleared. His kidnapping by pirates made the thing a right mess, but seeing as how you must be some sort of relation, I am sure he would want to speak with you as well."
That
would be wonderful," Soria cut Brannis off before he could respond. "We shall give you back the remains of your day, then, and continue making acquaintances this evening."
"Yes, yes. If you have any troubles finding Harwick Manor, just hire a carriage, and it will be taken care of," Thomas said.
"It was very nice to meet you, Sir Erend," Abile said.
Brannis felt Soria's grip on his arm tighten as she spoke.
"Until tonight, then," Brannis concurred.
3 kings, Tanner announced, spreading his cards face up in front of him, drawing groans from the crewmen he played against as he gathered a pile of coins to add to his own. Someone scooped up the discarded Talus cards and began to shuffle them when the tenor down in the hold changed. The sailors began to straighten up. Laughs were cut short. Eyes turned their attention toward the approaching Captain Zane.
"At ease, men," Captain Zane called out ahead of him.
"Mr. Tanner, come with me. We have things to discuss." Tanner scraped his coins into a pouch and hung it about his neck, tucking it safely inside his tunic.
"Maybe with luck he's ready to surrender," Tanner thought. "These boys of his don't have the coin to keep these games interesting."
He followed Captain Zane back to his cabin, where the twin-born pirate closed the door, leaving just the two of them to converse privately.
"So, had enough yet? I can let Kairos know straight away," Tanner offered.
"Stow it, Mr. Tanner," Captain Zane said. "You dance a bit too close to the railings as it is. If you had any idea how many times I considered having you thrown to the sharks, you would not sleep nights."
"No would have been fine," Tanner said, offering a lopsided grin in exchange for the threat.
"How well do you know Kairos Hinterdale, Mr. Tanner?" Captain Zane asked.
"Barely at all, personally. Heard stories about him for years, though, from Soria."
"Well, those stories were about Brannis, but, you know, spuds and potatoes," Tanner said with a shrug.
"Would it surprise you to know that he is now in the business of kidnapping children?" Captain Zane pressed.
Tanner was not sure he liked how the conversation was going. It sounded like he was having his boots polished. He wondered if Captain Zane was going to try some sort of bribe. "Hey, I'm a coin blade. I'm a hard guy to surprise with the sticky red side of human nature. I haven't seen it all, but I've seen most of it, you know. Kidnapping my child. My children. Sometimes this twin-born thing confuses even me," Zane said, shaking his head as he blew out a sigh that spoke to his frustration. "I may sound like the thieving preacher for saying so, but you are working with monsters, Mr. Tanner. Mr. Hinterdale possibly only figuratively so, but Rashaan Solaran is inhuman of mind and body."
"Yep," Tanner agreed.
"Yep, what?" Captain Zane pressed Tanner to clarify. "You sound like the thieving preacher. Far as I can tell, you went out of your way to get your reputation, Captain Scourge of the Katamic. Can't rightly complain when someone ignores all the nice bits of civilized life and does a better job at it than you," Tanner explained. He saw a dangerous look come over Denric Zane's eyes. Tanner held his arms wide in a universal gesture of helpless innocence. "Hey, who am I to judge? I just say what I'm seeing. I can't claim I'm any better. Just don't complain about it." "What have you got to complain about?" Zane asked. "You laze about my ship drinking rum and keeping my men gambling at cards when they should be working. In Vaedrus, you were Kyrus's lapdog, cozy and safe from the war." "Hey, boats are great. They get you places. They're no place to live, though."
"Huh. And here I thought you might make a fair pirate, if you lifted a finger to work," Zane scoffed.
"No, thanks. I could buy this ship. I don't need to steal shipments of wine and spices and divvy it 80 ways to try to make my fortune."
"I think you underestimate what a ship costs, Mr. Tanner," Captain Zane said with a look Tanner found patronizing.
150, 200 trade bars?" Tanner guessed. Captain Zane frowned and said nothing for a breath.
"No, not quite that much."
"Really, if you aren't ready to surrender, what did you want to talk to me about?" Tanner asked, tiring of trading barbs with Denric Zane. "You need me to get some message to Kyrus or not?"
"Not a surrender, but an offer. A trade. Possibly a peace."
"What you offering?"
"I will give him the staff of Galen, in return for the head of Rashaan Solaran," Captain Zane said.
"Oh, is that all?"
"No. I want my son back, too."
The coin flipped end over end, making its way across the backs of Wendell's fingers. Jaden had his hands up on the common room table as he leaned well across to watch intently. Twice already he had watched the coin disappear, unable to figure out where it had gone. The Icardian five-eckle that Wendell was using reached his index finger and tumbled over between his finger and thumb. He turned his hand over, and there was nothing there.
"How?"
Jaden asked, using Icardian. It was a good sign as far as Wendell was concerned. Jaden climbed up onto the table and took Wendell's hand in two of his own, turning it over, prying the fingers apart to check between them. Wendell allowed the boy to conduct his search. Showing interest in Tellurak was what he really needed, much more so than he needed him to find the coin. He almost felt guilty deceiving the boy, but if using magic to hide the coin in both the light and the ether was what it took to pique his curiosity, it was worth suffering a bit of guilt over. Heavy footsteps from the upper floors heralded the waking of Zelasan. The big man had trouble recovering from the wakeful night, and Wendell had preferred to wait for him to awaken rather than take Jaden out by himself to perform.
"You still here? Thought you would have gone off and left me the boy, or at least gone to do your tricks and take him with you. I think he's past the point of running off by now," Zelasan said once he reached the common room.
His greasy black beard and hair looked just as slovenly as ever, his recent awakening detracting little from his typically disreputable appearance. "I thought this morning I might make an exception," Wendell said. He drew Jaden's attention to his other hand, producing the coin, and handing it to the boy, prompting a whole new examination, this time directed at the mischievous currency.
Well, under the circumstances, I can understand that, Zell said.
You're welcome.
Wendell smiled at Zelisan's presumption.
Well, yes, there is that, but more than that, I think your assignment has been completed. I have Jaden, safe and recovering, and we are in the middle of Takalia. No place is perfect, but Takalia is a fair sight safer than most lands. Jaden even has a bit of source in him, so he will be able to learn real magic, not just the paltry tricks I can manage. In a year or two, he might not even need me to defend him.
Hey now, Zell said. Remember, I was the one passing those messages back and forth. I know that this is far from over. You have one of the most dangerous men in Tellurak riled, and likely wondering how he can track you down.
I don't think I'm done protecting you by a half measure.
I might need a lot less protection if we could just hide. You stand out a bit, my friend, Wendell argued.
Yeah, that whole standing on street corners and in marketplaces and making magic birds appear. Really bad habit of mine. Draws a lot of attention, Zelisan countered.
Wendell wondered if his own sarcasm was rubbing off.
I do not have to perform, you know.
I'm not so sure about that. It seems to be in your blood. I have coin enough to hide us all somewhere out of the way. You don't need to perform to eat.
I need to wake him up, Wendell said.
And when it winds up with the hired blade sniffing around for us on Denric Zane's coin, I'll be here to do something about it.
After trying to find the manor first by Brannis's memories of what Kyrus knew of Scar Harbor, then of Soria's best guess as to where it ought to have been, the two eventually relented and took a carriage to the gates of the small manor home where Thomas Harwick abided with his father, at least while Lord Harwick was staying in the city. Despite Thomas's promise to cover the expense of their transport, Sir Erend and Miss Soria Hinterdale were world travelers, and not without the means of affording their own conveyance. There was a way of acquitting oneself in society that Soria knew well. Thomas making the offer was good form. Accepting it would have been poor form, as would either party mentioning the matter again. Thomas and Abelaide greeted them at the door. Brannis felt odd being in her presence. It was like spying on Celia without her knowing. Abelaide gave him queer looks, but he suspected the matter of the painting was at issue. She thought he looked like Kyrus. He got no sense that she realized who Soria was, and if Celia was lurking just behind those innocent blue eyes, Juliana's twin ought to have looked nearly as familiar as Brannis.
Dinner will be out shortly. My father will be down shortly thereafter. I believe my butler is helping him preen, Thomas joked.
He can be quite vain, our Lord Harwick.
Thomas, Abelaide chided, smiling despite her tone. Lord Harwick isn't even here to defend himself. You should at least give your father the courtesy of poking your fun at him when he is here.
Brannis found himself smiling as well, until he caught Soria's gaze, frowning slightly at him. He smoothed his features once more into dignified politeness.
He seemed quite eager to meet you.
Once my father puts his mind in a certain frame, it consumes him. You have the fortune of being named Hinterdale at a time when my father is quite interested in the Hinterdale name. The whole witch trial business reflected poorly on the kingdom, and he is rather intent on patching up the holes it left.
Well, I am eager to meet him as well, Brannis said in reply.
He did well to keep his apprehension in check. He and Soria were both unarmored, and she unarmed. As a knight, it was socially acceptable for him to be armed with avalanche, even at a polite dinner. Depending on the scope of the conspiracy, he hoped that it would be enough. More than that, he hoped it would not be needed at all.
Servants brought out a course of soups for them to occupy themselves as they awaited the lord. Wine was poured for them as well, a Takalish vintage, some 20 years old.
Brannis found himself trying to piece together the contents of the soup and the origins of the wine and make some prejudgment of the lord, find some small thing he could deduce that could be of use. He took a calming breath. He resolved to wait, and observed with a clear mind instead. Lord Dunstan Harwick arrived just before the first course of dinner. He was older than Brannis had expected by Thomas's age, which he had guessed at perhaps 30 summers,
Years, he reminded himself. The Lord's hair was gone to gray nearly completely, with a few black strands to be seen among them. His face was wrinkled and sagged, but there was something too familiar about it to dismiss out of hand, something more than the rough resemblance to his son.
"Thomas, you were not wrong," Lord Harwick bellowed jovially. "Sir Erend here is the very image of Miss Abelais' painting. It would almost seem as if the painting had called him to her."
"Father, allow me to introduce Sir Erend Hinterdale and his wife, Lady Soria," Thomas said. Soria extended her hand, which Lord Harwick took delicately in his own, but did not make the old-fashioned gesture of kissing it. Brannis offered his own and shook the Lord's hand, feeling a grip that he suspected had never been crushing, even in the Lord's younger years. He met Lord Harwick's gaze straight on as he did so, looking for some spark, some flinch, some sign of recognition, but found nothing. Introductions passed. They took their seats for dinner. After some tiny meat pastries, they were served a meal of roasted duck in a sauce made with keshi spices. The servants refilled their wines, prompting Lord Harwick to rise from his seat.
"I would like to propose a toast," he called out.
Everyone else rose and took up their own glasses.
"As they said in ancient Garnivia, play along and we shall speak later."
The latter was not a Garnivian at all, Brannis knew, unless the ancient Garnivians spoke Cadran. "Well, the conspiracy is real," Brannis realized. "I hate being right at times."
"Hear, hear," all mumbled in rough unison.
Brannis exchanged a quick look with his wife, and her expression told him that she had been paying attention as well. "Drat, I should have been looking for a reaction from Abelais, not Soria." Brannis fumed at himself a moment, careful to keep any hint of his turbulent thoughts out of his expression, as the conversation turned to pleasantries and amusing stories. The sort of things that people talked about when they were not part of inter-world power struggles. Brannis played along, as he had been told to do, but found himself fidgeting at the table as the meal wore on. At long last, after four courses and a dessert of pumpkin pie, the meal was called to a close.
"Thomas, perhaps tonight would be a nice night for a carriage ride. There is a clear sky, and I know Miss Abelais loves stargazing. It will allow me to have some time to interview our guests," Lord Harwick said.
"Father, always working," Thomas mused with a slow shake of his head. Still, the younger Harwick took his father's advice and departed with Abelais.
"We can speak in my study," Lord Harwick said to Brannis and Soria once Thomas and Abelais were beyond hearing.
With no further explanation, Lord Harwick led them upstairs. Up one flight and down a short hallway, Lord Harwick opened a door. Soria, who had been walking with her arm twined with Brannis's, pulled up short. Lord Harwick, more observant than one might have expected of a man of advancing years, took note.
"Yes, it is warded. I can explain inside."
Soria glanced up at Brannis, her look telling him to be on guard, or that she was suspicious, possibly that they were making a mistake. Brannis had never quite gotten the hang of all the things he was supposed to be able to infer from her various looks. He shrugged in reply, too far committed to turn back, even if they might be walking into a trap. He followed Lord Harwick into the study.
"Thomas does no real work, so the study in his home is mainly for my use when I visit. Close the door and we might converse without minding our voices," Lord Harwick instructed Brannis, who complied.
Lord Harwick seated himself behind the dark-stained oak desk, and rummaged in the drawers as Brannis and Soria found chairs to pull up across from him. Lord Harwick pulled out a pipe, and some pipeweed. It lit with no need for tinder, to the surprise of neither twin-born. The Lord also pulled out three small glasses and a crystal decanter filled with an amber liquid.
"I never quite expected this day would come, Brannis," Lord Harwick said in Cadran,
not looking Brannis's way as he poured them all drinks. He slid two across the desk, and Brannis and Soria took one apiece, neither drinking as they waited for the little drama Lord Harwick was playing out.
"I went to quite a bit of trouble getting you here, playing both sides, holding the knife by the blade."
He looked up at Brannis, pipe clamped in his mouth, drink in hand, and smiled.
"Caladrius!" Brannis exclaimed.
He had seen that same expression on his uncle's face, looking 20 summers younger than Lord Harwick, and thicker of both face and gut than the somewhat stout lord.
"You?" Soria asked.
"Yes, me," Harwick replied. "And you?"
He took the pipe from his mouth and pointed the stem at Brannis's chest.
"Really are Brannis Solaran. Fit me for a saddle if that boy Kyrus is not something unnatural."
"Wait, so you are behind this conspiracy?"
"To what end?" Brannis demanded.
"Conspiracy? Ah,
pick one," Harwick scoffed. "Brannis, I have petty schemes wrapped around minor plots disguising treasons. Where would you like me to start?"
"Can you tell him whether his peasant girl here is Celia or not? He's been insufferable about it of late," Soria requested. Brannis turned to give her a scowl, but saw such an earnest plea in her eyes that he nodded his agreement and waited for his uncle to answer her.
"Not. There are a few twists around that particular mystery, but before you blame me for it, I must tell you it was the warlock's idea. He is wary of Kyrus, Brannis. The boy is raw as pheasant on the wing, but no one has seen power like that, bottled up in just one body. He figured if Kyrus has a sweetheart, he'd make a twin born of her, and keep the Cadran version close when you were about."
"But there were so many little details, things I never told him," Brannis said. "All I gave him that he could have used was her name and likeness. How did he get Celia of that information?"
"Well, that, I am afraid, I must confess to. A name was all I needed. The likeness was just what Rashaan needed to pick a girl out to match. The fact that Celia looked so much like her was good fortune for Rashaan. But those tiny little flames you keep stamping on that you have for Celia, that, I believe, was Kyrus's influence on you."
"Too convenient," Soria said, crossing her arms and frowning.
"Lucky, perhaps, but had Abelay and Celia not shared a close enough resemblance as to perhaps be explained by those vain cosmetic magics you ladies fancy, and I must heartily voice my support of them, Acardia could use their like." "Well, Rashaan would have found someone else," Harwick explained.
"Did she know?" Brannis asked. It was his turn to show anger. Kyrus had promised to protect her. Had she been playing him for the fool?
"Abelay, no. I planted images in her mind that led her to paint the portrait of you. Celia, yes,"
Lord Harwick said, somberly at the last. He knew that he might be condemning Celia, Brannis realized. He turned to see Soria's reaction. She stared ahead, not showing a response.
"We could have tried planting simple ideas in her mind like I did with Abelay. But Celia is a sorceress, strong as I am. She still might have slipped free of the false memories. Instead, we took her into our confidence, and trusted that if she could fool Jinzan Fair when she was captured, she could keep up the act with you as well."
"Do I have to wake Kyrus up to keep you from killing her?" Brannis asked Soria.
"You cannot kill her, Juliana," Harwick said, choosing to call her by the name he had long known her. "Rashaan can know nothing of this. He must believe that Celia is a deterrent to violence near him. If he does not think that you would be hesitant to use strong magics near her, he will look to some other method to leash you. Valuable as you are, he is likely to find a way to kill you, or have you killed, if he thinks you are a threat. There is a terrifying madness that lies just beneath that veneer of control."
"Wait. I thought you were Rashaan's indispensable man, his most trusted ally," Soria asked, bewildered.
She took a swig of the brandy in her glass, blinking momentarily as the drink was stronger than she expected. "He has to believe that. We lost 3 of our strongest sorcerers in a fit of his rage. The rest of us he trusts like boys outside the virgin cloister. He watched us, waiting for any of the others who had worked closely with Gravis and Maruk to slip and betray themselves. I made myself valuable enough that I was able to take over that watch."
"You mentioned Gravis and my father. What of Stalia Gardarus?" Brannis asked, picking up on the omission.
She was aware, but not nearly so guilty as they. He killed her as an example, since otherwise House Garterus might have gotten ideas that they were above Solarand and Archon. The heart of the Emperor conspiracy were Gravis, Maruk, Dolvain, and myself, Harwick explained.
But why? Why are you going to all this trouble? If everyone opposed Rashan, why not all unite against him? Soria asked.
They were scared, Brannis said. Lord Harwick closed his eyes and sighed. He nodded his admission as he took a drink from his own glass. Dolvain is resourceful. He has stayed out of trouble with Rashan despite openly opposing him and secretly working against him. It is the openness that has fooled Rashan thus far. The warlock is devilishly clever, but admitting his opposition has made Dolvain a known threat, a mere political adversary. I think Rashan even admires him, after a fashion, the principled stand against his stewardship and the purity of the imperial line, all quite admirable.
But then, what about the murders? Brannis said. Celia told me you arranged them, had her carry them out.
That was for your benefit, I'm afraid. Dolvain's support was growing, threatening to expand beyond the point where it could be hidden.
How does that benefit me? Brannis asked.
Kyrus was going to be forced to take sides. There could not be an open rebellion in Kadrus with you remaining neutral. If you sided with Rashan, then Dolvain's faction would have been crushed. If you sided with Dolvain, you would have been pitted against Rashan directly. Strong as you are, I do not think that would bode well for you, or for our chances of eventually putting the fire to that demon.
So what now? Soria asked.
We wait for the time to be right. Brannis, you must make sure Kyrus takes no overt interest in battle magic, or anything else that makes you a more immediate concern for Rashan. He likes you, values you, but at the same time, one misstep might be all it takes for him to decide you are no longer worth the risk of keeping alive. If luck plays into our hands, we might secure the staff of Galen, which might give Kyrus enough of an advantage to risk a confrontation.
But I think it may be more prudent to slowly master magic until your control matches your source.
So in the meantime, we just do... One moment, Harwick interrupted. His eyes stared past them with heavy lids, unblinking. Brannis and Soria waited, recognizing that far-off look as ether vision, or more likely attention paid to Vaedrus. You two should awaken in Kadrus. We can continue our discussion another time.